tried to stop his manic assault on his nodes multiple times, but Zack shrugged away the attempts as he felt it was working. But finally, he couldn't take the pain any longer. But he had already broken open his fifth node and gained its equivalent level by that point. The suns had started to set by that point already, meaning that Zack had been occupied for at least 4 or 5 hours.
"Just what did you eat growing up?"
Agros muttered from the side when he saw that Zack had finally stopped abusing himself.
"This was not what I meant, that it was fine to start taking node-breaking pills. Taking pills like that should be a straight ticket to the morgue, or at least the infirmary."
Zack could only respond with a weak smile, and he guessed that this wasn't the time to explain that he was actually a bit disappointed with the results of the experiment. When he had been forcibly instilled with the miasma from tens of thousands of zombies, he'd managed to eat 10 purification pills in one go. Just 3 were supposed to be a death sentence, but he'd survived just fine. He had thought that he would at least be able to take 4 or 5 node-breaking pills in one go to speed up the process, especially after gaining the odd hidden node, but he honestly didn't dare to even try 3 of them at the moment. The experiment also indicated that the void heart did not have much of an effect when ingesting pills. He couldn't sense his heart doing anything at all, really, compared to the noticeable effect when absorbing a miasma crystal. Did it perhaps only work on natural sources of energy rather than refined ones? The man in the vision had eaten the void and a sun, after all, not a mountain of pills. Another stark realization was that he couldn't simply eat node-breaking pills continuously. He felt that he was quickly building up a resistance as they traveled, and by the time he had cracked open the fifth node, he wasn't very confident there was any point in continuing his mad consumption. He knew that one couldn't simply keep eating pills for a few days and reach the peak of the E grade, but he still felt it was too early to feel this kind of response.
"Isn't there anything I can do?" Zack asked. "I still have a lot of pills."
"The resistance will decrease with time, but the process is pretty tedious, and you won't get the full effect again no matter how long you wait,"
Agros leered.
"But gaining levels through killing and cultivation also helps reset your body, so to speak. I guess you've reached your cap for now, unless you find some natural treasure with similar effects."
Zack sighed, but he guessed he should be thankful there was a limit to how much you could gain from just cramming a bunch of pills down your gullet. If there were no restrictions, then the incursion leaders would all have been level 150 rather than 80 to 90 by now. Gaining 5 full levels in one day was still extremely good, and it had boosted his attributes by a shocking degree. However, he still wasn't out of things to use just because he couldn't eat any more node-breaking pills. Zack swapped over to his Draugr form and took out one of his D-grade miasma crystals. He didn't have too many of them, but Zack figured it would be enough to fill up the 5 empty nodes on his undead side. Terrifying waves of death-attuned energies slammed into his body as he started absorbing a D-grade crystal for the first time. It felt like he was deep inside the liquid miasma that surrounded Bayzi for a second, almost drowning from the waves crashing through him. But he soon managed to steady himself, and it felt like he had ascended to the heavens because of how good it felt. He could barely restrain himself from moaning out loud, which would have become an eternal point of embarrassment in front of this group. He would rather stab himself to snap out of it than be forced to listen to Emily's and Agros's taunts over the following centuries. Zack noticed that the death-attuned energy from the miasma crystal didn't have any idea where to move, in contrast to the pills, which almost seemed to have homing capabilities. Still, it wasn't too hard for Zack to push the excess miasma into the sluggish whirlpool in his right arm. It felt like the whirlpool was like a bottomless hole, as more and more energies burrowed into the spot, gradually filling it with vigor. The stagnant whirlpool slowly started to pick up speed, but it took Zack well over an hour before he felt a shudder through his body as the node stopped consuming my asthma. The time it took wasn't too bad, but it was still more than expected. He had leveled pretty damn quickly with E-grade crystals in the F-grade, and he was already in the 40s by the time he got his hands on some. If he got some E-grade crystals at level 1, then he'd blast through levels like they were nothing. It only got worse from there, though, as the second node took almost 50% longer to fill up until another wave of power spread through his body. He simply kept going, though, as land was still nowhere near in sight. The third node took over 3 hours to fill, and the fourth node took 5. It had cost him 9 D-grade crystals to complete, which was pretty bad news. It had almost emptied his stock, and this was just for filling already opened nodes. The node breaking was the most energy-demanding part, and it seemed like using Nexus crystals to level up would already be impractical for him by the time he reached level 80 with both his classes. Zack still had one more node to fill with energy, but he stopped, as they finally could see land far in the distance. Chapter 80. Death Defiance. At first, there was just a thin green line, but they were able to make out the landscape soon enough. Zack breathed out in relief when he saw that it was a pretty normal coast with some leafy growth and grasslands. It wasn't the sandblasted desert of the scorched continent, as the only greenery there was the strip of palms along the coast. Zack still couldn't see any massive array in the sky, though, which meant they were still quite far from the dead zone.
"We'll have to keep going until we find a settlement," Zack said as he put away his miasma crystals. "We will need to make another jump."
"Finally," Emily muttered. "It's so uncomfortable to sit next to you while you absorb that stuff. Feels like I am both cold and feverish at the same time."
"Sorry about that," Zack smiled as he turned back to his human form. "I needed to get some levels for my second class as well."
Zack opened his screen again and marveled at the progress over the past day. Rushing levels in the E grade was just putting himself further and further apart from the rest of the humans of Earth.
Name: Zachary Atwood. Level: 80. Class: E, Epic. Edge of Arcadia. Race: E, Human. Alignment: Earth. Port Atwood, Lord. Titles: ... Tower of Eternity, 8th floor. Heaven's Triumvirate, Fated, Peak Power, Monarch Select. Limited titles: Front Runner, Tower of Eternity Sector All-Star, 14th. Dao, Fragment of the Axe, Middle, Fragment of the Coffin, Middle, Fragment of the Bodhi, Early. Core: E, Duplicity. Strength: 1,988. Increase: 91%. Efficiency: 199%. Dexterity: 766. Increase: 65%. Efficiency: 170%. Endurance: 2004. Increase: 99%. Efficiency: 199%. Vitality: 1,278. Increase: 89%. Efficiency: 189%. Intelligence: 492. Increase: 65%. Efficiency: 170%. Wisdom: 814. Increase: 70%. Efficiency: 170%. Luck: 321. Increase: 91%. Efficiency: 179%. Free points: 90. Nexus coins: F, 6,896,098,998.
Zack's strength had already passed his endurance by this point, though Forrester's constitution was barely keeping it ahead in his human form. It was no surprise, as his class choices heavily leaned toward strength. It was crazy to think that his strength wasn't even 1,000 just 2 days ago, and it was a clear justification why so many he met believed that choosing low-rarity classes was the way to go. It made sense. He felt he had pushed the F-grade to a point that was almost unprecedented in his whole sector, thanks to his combination of having 2 classes and snatching up almost all the progenitor titles of Earth. He had then risked his life multiple times inside the Tower of Eternity to push himself even further. Yet he had gained just as many attributes by simply gaining a couple of levels in the E-grade. He also knew it would be an extremely taxing challenge to form a cultivator's core that was high quality enough to be able to support someone like him, whereas a genius who chose an uncommon E-grade class would barely meet a bottleneck at all. Zack's eyes turned to the 90 free points next, but there wasn't really a question of what he needed to do for now. He threw it all into his dexterity, pushing it to 914. The flat points from the class had skewed his ratio, but the allocation had righted the ship once more. However, he wasn't sure whether he could keep putting all his free points into dexterity, as he had done during most of the F-grade. His fighting style didn't only rely on his massive strength, but also his nigh invulnerability. The latter would take a hit during the E-grade, as he only got 8 points in endurance per level from his Fetters of Desolation class. Meanwhile, he would get more than 3 times that in strength, if you counted the strength coming from both his classes. Perhaps putting part of his free attributes into endurance to help it stay up was his best shot at keeping himself sturdy enough. That, combined with the boosts from his Tao's, would probably be enough to stay an unkillable juggernaut. Zack put the matter aside for now, as he wouldn't gain any more easy levels in the short run. However, he was still a bit leery about the attribute cap, and he ate one of his basic race-evolving pills to push his attribute cap forward a bit. It was obviously not enough to completely evolve his race to D-grade, but he could still improve his attribute cap from 2,500 by at least a few hundred this way. That was all that Zack needed for the moment, as it was enough to avoid any issues in case he had some Tao epiphany during the battle with the undead. An exuberant energy entered his stomach, and an intense warmth spread throughout his whole body. Streams of power entered every single pore, filling them with power. His cells were like a bottomless abyss, and they greedily swallowed everything he could give them. Unfortunately, the pill only contained so much energy, and the warmth quickly abated as his body absorbed the last of the energies. He hadn't made any breakthrough, but his body felt extremely good, like he had just had a full-body massage. Zack took a deep breath to enjoy the fresh air, but an abominable smell hit his nostrils and immediately dragged him out of his reverie, only to be met with 10 appalled stares. He quickly looked down at his body, only to find his skin covered in an oily brown substance. "You stink," the demon said with a disgusted snarl. "Why are you improving your race in this cramped space?" Kenzie didn't even speak up before she blasted him with cascading waves of water with the help of one of her skills, utterly drenching him and almost throwing him off the leaf. The torrent of water continued for a few seconds, but all the gunk was blasted clean when it abated.
Thanks, Zack said as he spat out a mouthful of water. I'd forgotten that would happen.
It almost felt like he had made a social faux pas akin to releasing a fart in a cramped elevator, and he turned his gaze toward the horizon to hide his embarrassment, instead focusing on finding a town. Thankfully, he had the perfect item for an occasion just like this, and he took out the automatic map from his spatial ring. The area it showed was a bit limited, but it was still twice what they could see with their naked eyes, and there were even markings of nexus nodes on it. It didn't take them long to find a settlement with the help of the map. It was a walled-off enclave with about 200 houses hidden in the shadow of a mountain, with no roads leading to and from the place. Zack didn't bother announcing their presence. They landed in the middle of the square. Unfortunately, it looked like the place was one of the weakest settlements, and it hadn't even bought a teleportation array so far. They were a small community, completely cut off from the world, and seeing the flying treasure and the weird retinue was a huge shock to them. However, Zack had no time for an orientation with these people, and they simply found the leader, a nondescript middle-aged man who had reached level 32. There was a small exploit he had found while traveling before. Zack essentially explained who he was and exposed his level, and the mayor was more than willing to join his banner as a subordinate. Judging by how gaunt everyone looked, they had a hard time even getting enough Nexus coins for food, and joining the strongest man in the world was no doubt a godsend opportunity. A small hovel like this would never have unlocked the ability to buy a teleportation array normally, but now that they were part of Port Atwood, the mayor suddenly had a large increase in available purchases, including a slew of arrays. There were limits to how many places Zack could boost like this, but he was still well within his limits, as he only had a dozen towns or so under his command. Zack then donated enough money for him to buy the array, and he breathed out in relief when he saw that almost all of his connections were still there when checking out the array menu. The advance forts belonging to the Marshall clan weren't available, though, meaning that anything inside or even too close to the dead zone was blocked out by jammers or the death-attuned energies. They were gone from the remote village a few seconds later, having teleported over to one of the strongholds closest to the dead zone. It was a base controlled by the Underworld Council, and Zack felt it was their best bet at getting updated intelligence from the front lines.
"Halt!"
a man mounting a massive machine gun shouted upon their appearance, but he quickly realized who they were and stood down.
"I need to speak with the council,"
Zack said, and he was soon led out of the building housing the teleportation array. However, Zack stopped in his tracks the moment he exited the building, and he gawked at how the whole world was tinted in aquamarine. The blue sky of Earth had been completely supplanted by the chilly light blue tint of death-attuned energies. If it weren't for the normal cosmic energy in the area, he would have thought the world was already realigned. However, there was an unmistakable hint of death in the ambient energies, even though this camp wasn't inside the dead zone, proving that the alignment was already in progress. The turquoise hue was unexpected, but the most shocking scene was the gargantuan lines crisscrossing the sky, forming fractals whose size beggared comprehension. Just how much energy had been siphoned out of their planet to form this array? Zack started to worry that Earth would end up crippled even if they managed to deal with the undead somehow. He hated to say it, but was this world even worth staying on if that happened?
Death Defiance. Unique. Limited. The war between life and death is as old as time. Stop the realignment of your world. Reward. World Core upgrade. Individual rewards based on contribution. 0 of 1.
Did you guys just get a quest?
Zack asked with confusion as he looked at the screen that had suddenly appeared in front of him.
To deal with the undead?
Yep,
Emily said with excitement shining in her eyes, and the Valkyries nodded their heads as well. Zack frowned in confusion as he looked away from the ominous skies. Why was the system giving out a quest like this? It hadn't done that when he fought any of the other incursions. Did the system perhaps feel that people weren't struggling enough against the undead empire and wanted to push for a final cataclysmic battle? They soon walked into a command tent, where 6 of the Underworld Councillors were already waiting.
"Thank God you're here! We were starting to get a bit worried,"
Gregor said, and it almost looked like he wanted to run over and touch Zack to make sure he was actually real.
"We were even contemplating paying the fee to enter the Ark World, but seeing you shoot up in levels the past hours felt like a stay of execution."
Zack nodded at the human counselor with a smile before he frowned in confusion at the unfamiliar word.
"The what? Ark World?"
Zack asked with confusion, almost forgetting about the quest he just got.
"The New World government approached us 2 days ago, shortly after we lost connection with Port Atwood. They say that they have discovered a spatial tunnel leading to a safe mystic realm. They call it the Ark World. They are currently shaking down the elites of the Earth to allow them to join the Exodus,"
Gregor explained.
"So they're abandoning Earth?"
Zack asked with a frown.
"Well, honestly, I can understand them. There's not much we can do. We can barely hold the lines against these undying bastards. reaching the heart of the dead zone and taking out the leaders? Impossible, at least for us,
Gregor said pointedly.
That's why I'm here, Zack said. If the array in the sky activates, then I have failed. At that point, you might as well leave for the Ark world if you can. Humans won't survive long on a death-attuned planet.
Is there anything we can do to help?
Romal, the official speaker of the council, said.
I would be honored to join you in battle. I would rather fight for our shared planet than hide in some cramped mystic realm. Our people have already done that once, and I know what future such a decision will lead to.
And it's not like the unliving are stupid, another counselor added. They will find us sooner or later, hiding in that hidden realm. I bet they have 10 ways of forcing a passage open for every way we have to keep it closed.
I will just take a very small group that will help with the arrays. I will deal with the Lich King myself, but you can still help me in other ways. Do you know if any of the undead generals are out on the battlefield?
Zack asked.
We believe one still resides within the closest horde, Gregor nodded. It has stayed extremely cohesive compared to the other two hordes.
Can you make sure the horde and their army are occupied for the next 2 days? Zack asked. Things will go smoother if the Lich King isn't aided by any generals or his hordes.
We'll do what we can, Romal promised. When are you setting out?
The moment we're done here. The sooner the array in the sky is turned off, the better, Zack said. By the way, have you guys received a quest to stop the undead incursion as well?
We received it yesterday, Gregor nodded. Everyone who is above level 30 and beneath this cursed sky has it. I guess the rest are considered irrelevant in this fight.
Chapter 81. Attunement.
Are there any merit exchanges that have cropped up? Zack asked as the quest reminded him of the beast waves back on his island. And have you figured out what the World Corps upgrade entails?
Merit exchanges? Not that we know of,
Gregor slowly said with some confusion.
We don't know anything about the Corps either. Perhaps it will upgrade our planet to C-grade? The system did mention it was D-grade when we got integrated, after all.
You wish,
Ah Gras snorted from the side, drawing everyone's glances.
This world is as wretched as D-grade worlds come. The energy and insights feel abundant now, but wait until the origin Tao is gone and you've reached peak E-grade. There is no way that a single quest will bump you all the way to a C-grade planet. Our whole demon horde with tens of thousands of forces only has one of them.
So, what do you think? Zack asked.
It might push the world a bit further, to something like middle D-grade. It might increase the size of the world as well, as it is quite small. A larger planet would allow larger forces and higher overall strength, along with the formation of more resources that can be used to birth powerhouses. Or it might even give the world an attunement, which would probably be the most valuable reward.
An attunement? Zack repeated thoughtfully.
It might not be useful for us, but for the following generations, Agras added. A fire-attuned world would generate a lot of fire-aspected treasures and herbs, attuned crystals, and even the fire affinities of cultivators would slowly increase. Specialization begets power.
Zack nodded in agreement. Such a scenario would probably be the best for Earth, though it was useless for him unless the attunement was life. The planet becoming death-aspected for his Draugr side was obviously not going to happen, as that was the very thing the quest goal was designed to stop. The counselors also tried to discreetly inquire why he had been missing the past days, and how he'd managed to gain so many levels in short order. Zack explained it by slightly mixing truths and lies. He said he'd left for the Tower of Eternity in order to evolve his Taos and gain achievements to the point that he could evolve. That was the only way he would gain enough power to assault the Dead Zone, Lying about going to the Tower of Eternity was a waste of effort. It was just a matter of time before his activities were made known across Earth. It shouldn't be too hard for people to figure out he was the one who caused such a ruckus the moment they went to the tower themselves. As for the levels, he didn't bother hiding it, and told them about the node-breaking pills. He had a massive surplus of them, now that he couldn't use any more for the time being. Most would probably be put into his merit exchange, so they stayed within his force, but he could also consider selling some of them to outsiders. In fact, Zack was already thinking of holding an auction of his own, sooner or later, provided their whole planet didn't fall to the undead empire. He had a lot of items right now that were pretty common in the multiverse, but still unheard of on Earth. It was a perfect opportunity to make some money before people managed to find their own business connections. No one on Earth was nearly as wealthy as he was, but the accumulated wealth of tens of thousands of elites should be pretty impressive by now. It was a bit unethical to overcharge his fellow countrymen, but it could be considered a fee for closing pretty much all the incursions for them. Zack didn't want to stay in the base any longer than that, and he left after he had transferred all the latest intelligence reports to a tablet. The bad news was that the dead zone was enormous by this point, having grown more than twice in size since he visited the last time. The realignment array had not only increased the density of the death attunement, but the forces of Pangaea left multiple kilometers every day. Death spread forth like an intractable wave, and you could even see the process with your naked eyes. Every single one of the border towns was long gone, having turned into unlivable ghost towns by now. Teleporting closer wouldn't work either, due to the jamming. That meant that there was no time to waste, as the distance they needed to traverse was simply massive. He guessed that it would take over half a day to reach the core of the dead zone, even with the flying treasure. They still had some time, according to Kenzie's estimate, but he didn't want to be late once more. The desolate landscape flashed past them as they soared through the air, this time hidden from sight with the help of a mobile illusion array that made them perfectly blend in with the surroundings. He had gotten the idea from the seer during the climb. He had mentioned that his descendants had placed a treasure on a flying treasure and hid in the sky, making them impossible to find. The dead zone was no doubt crawling with those ghost scouts, but this would give them a small chance at arriving to the core unnoticed. At the beginning of their flight, they could see not only the undead horde far in the distance, but also trucks and armies moving about on the ground. However, after 1 hour had passed, there was no activity from the living. They saw a smaller horde move toward the larger one at the edge of the dead zone, but that was about it. The hours passed, but no one could relax. Everyone was afraid a storm of ghosts would blast through the clouds and attack them at any moment. But it really looked like their approach went by unnoticed. The dead zone was perhaps too big to monitor by now, allowing them to pass by unnoticed. Zack was about to return to his meditation, but something in the distance caught his attention.
"Wait, stop for a second," Zack said as he pointed at a specific spot. "Set down the vessel over there."
He had kept cosmic gaze running to keep watch for any hidden threats. But rather than ghosts, it had allowed him to see something unexpected. A beacon of life in a sea of dour death. Joanna wordlessly changed course, and they landed where he indicated, and Zack's eyes widened with recognition as he looked around. He had been here before. He had once sat beneath the tree in front of him.
"What is it?" Agras asked with confusion as Zack walked over to the mutated tree. "We don't really have time for a botanical study."
"I just want to confirm something," Zack said as he closed his eyes with one hand against the magnificent tree.
It was really the same one. He had found this mysterious tree once more, hidden in a sea of death. It felt like there was some sort of fate behind the second encounter.
"Hopefully you can help me in the future," Zack muttered, as he ran his fingers across the bark. "I'll come back again after I've dealt with the undead."
"Heavens help us,"
the demon muttered from the side. He's lost it.
Shush, Kenzie said as she kicked Agros's shin before turning to Zack. What is it?
Life and death, Zack said as he stepped back onto the leaf. It's pretty amazing. If I could bring it with me without killing it, I would. I feel I can use it as a base to study my Taos.
Seeing the small beacon of life in the sea of death not only resonated with his Taos, but it also made him remember his skill quest. Splitting life and death was such an obscure concept, but perhaps this natural oddity might guide him down the right path.
Take note of this place, Zack said to the Valkyries and his sister. We need to return after we've dealt with the incursion.
The group kept flying through the dead zone, but the dense death attunement was unfortunately having an impact on his vessel, drastically slowing its speed. It was still a lot quicker compared to the old disc he had, but it felt like a crawl after the shocking speed it had exhibited when infused with the Tao of the Bodhi. Zack didn't dare waste his mental energy on speeding up the vessel, though, in case something happened. He knew he was the muscle of the expedition, with the others acting as backup. The delay gave him enough time to finish filling his fifth node on his Draugr side, though, allowing him to balance out his two classes at level 80. He put the 10 points into dexterity once more before he turned back into his human form. He still didn't want to expose his Draugr side to the undead invaders unless necessary, especially after learning about Kathea and her master. What if that peak C-grade monster became interested and tracked him down? He was already traveling in search of something to break through, and wouldn't Zack's body make an interesting study? Even Ariel said so. Zack sighed for the umpteenth time over the fact that there was no one to turn to for help regarding these issues. No old ancestor who could make their problems go away with a wave of his hand. Everything was up to him to solve. But he was out of treasures that could help him become stronger. He instead turned his attention to the next thing, his skills. With him having reached peak mastery of multiple skills, along with having evolved, upgrading his skills was the next logical step. He had already learned some of the path from Gelau and his visit to the Undead Kingdom, and he had shored up his knowledge from the following encounters. There were a few ways to upgrade his skills, demanding various degrees of interaction from himself. The simplest method was to adjust the skill fractal so that it would be usable in the E-grade as well. That wasn't to say that his old skills suddenly had turned useless, but there was a limit of how much energy they could contain. His miasmic bulwark would only be able to block so much damage, and the wooden hand he conjured with nature's punishment would only be able to unleash so much destruction. But this could be changed. The skill fractals were right now like crude drawings placed in the masterpiece that were the intricate E-grade pathways. You could adjust these drawings to blend better, to take advantage of the higher amount of energies that could flow through them. The process of doing this was the same as when he'd manually drawn the pathways for his two classes back in the F-grade. However, there was no blueprint provided this time. This meant that you were required to not only understand the skill to a great degree, but also how the skill fractals worked. You could actually ruin the skill altogether, forcing you to redraw the fractal from scratch. Even worse, skill fractals were in a sense perfect as they were provided by the system. So every time you ruined them and remade them from memory, you were bound to add some small imperfections because of your lacking understanding. Too many failures, and the power of the skill might become just a shadow of their original power. Even then, this method was generally considered the easiest way of progress. But that wasn't really the case for Zack. Most people had grown up in a world of cultivation, spending their entire childhood studying fractals and pathways and the Tao in preparation for when they could finally start cultivating. He could still somewhat intuitively understand what parts of the fractals did, but his understanding was still far worse compared to any average cultivator in this regard. The second method was to upgrade through epiphany, and Zack guessed that this was his best shot at rapid progress.
The odds of having such an epiphany mid-battle, like a Tao epiphany, were pretty slim, but there were treasures that could put you in a unique state of mind. Gelau had also mentioned skill arrays, which was something that most forces and academies used. You could even say they were an integral part of a proper heritage. They were like assisted guidance systems that helped you upgrade certain skills. They resulted in slightly worse compatibility compared to doing it yourself, but they would drastically reduce the risk of messing up, ruining the skills altogether. There were even generalist arrays that worked on most skills, but they put much greater demand on your personal understanding of runes, patterns, the Tao, and fractals. In either case, it was moot, since Zack had no way to get his hands on these kinds of arrays at the moment. Finally, there were the skill upgrade quests that the system would reward. But the first one wasn't until level 90, as far as he knew. It was usually a branched quest that would either allow him to upgrade a skill or transform it, and that this was the best chance to fuse two of his skills into one. Certainly, one could fuse skills without the assistance of the system, but you needed an extremely strong understanding to do something like that. It was probably something better left alone until you had reached a much higher understanding. Perhaps Iriel could assist him a bit the next time he entered the inheritance, but that was still a decade away. Zack didn't really have a lot of options right now, but he kept looking inward at his skill fractals and their connection to the pathways. He figured that if he got a better grasp of the fractals and how they were lacking compared to the pathways, then he might be more likely to be able to gain an epiphany mid-battle. Sort of like the heat of the battle was how he'd managed to form the bronze flashes inside the tower. However, no matter how hard he tried over the following hours, he simply couldn't make heads or tails about it. He would no doubt be able to redraw all the fractals in his sleep by now, but that didn't really help him in his predicament.
"I think we're just 2 hours away by foot now," Kenzie suddenly said, waking Zack up from his reverie. "What do you want to do?"
"Let's go by foot from here," Zack said after some hesitation. "We'll see if we can reach the core unnoticed."
Chapter 82. Go Time. Zack wasn't confident that their mobile illusion array would do them any good against the defenses of the undead empire. He figured that they would be able to hide more efficiently as a small group of humanoids in a forest that was no doubt teeming with zombies, rather than on top of a lustrous giant leaf ripping through the otherwise dour sky. There was no way that the Lich King hadn't erected any defensive arrays, now that the realignment was so close. But there was a very big difference between a passively running array and an array actively controlled by an array master. Perhaps they would be able to crack open the entrance if they caught the Lich King by surprise. Besides, they would have to be on the ground anyway, if they wanted to deploy any of the array breakers they had brought. The group landed inside the forest, and everyone already wore some sort of equipment that hid their life-attuned aura. Agras and Zack increased the effect even further by adding a layer of shadows and dousing them in his Tao field for the fragment of the coffin. The coffin wasn't strictly death-attuned just yet, but it was death-adjacent, and it helped them blend into the surroundings a lot better than if they just walked in as is. They soon got a chance at testing the efficacy of their disguise as they spotted a mob of zombies lumbering about, but they could breathe out in relief when their small group walked by completely unnoticed. The zombies treated them as though they were air, and the group kept running further toward the core of the dead zone. Of course, that small encounter wasn't enough for them to relax. Those zombies were still unawakened, which meant they were as dumb as they came. Real revenants might not be able to sense that their group was alive, but they would no doubt understand that something was amiss with a group of strangers running toward their stronghold. Luckily, it seemed that the undead hadn't bothered planting any spectral scouts in the forest. Perhaps they figured that the increasingly dense number of zombies would be enough as an early warning. Or perhaps they didn't even care if anyone came all this way, confident in their defensive capabilities. But the group of 11 still avoided any undead they spotted as they inched closer to their target. It forced them to take some detours, but it still only took them 3 hours until they reached their target, the true inner sanctum of the dead zone, or rather, the barrier that blocked them off from it. Massive pitch-black runes hovered in the air, each of them humming with strength. They formed a long wall that stretched kilometers in each direction, and Zack could vaguely spot massive, unholy beacons some distance behind them, no doubt powering them with a steady flow of power. There was no physical wall acting as a foundation, but that didn't mean the barrier would be any easier to deal with. This was something that made use of the dead zone itself, and it would no doubt require a massive blast to crack open. However, reaching the target wasn't the only trouble they faced. There was also the even thicker wall of zombies that stood between them and the array. The density of the undead lumbering about in the forest had gradually increased, as the density of miasma did, and they currently had zombies within 30 meters in pretty much every direction by now. However, they almost formed a solid wall of putrid flesh along the defensive array in front of them. The swarm of zombies was well over 20 meters thick, and it seemed to stretch endlessly in each direction along the barrier. Millions and millions of former citizens of Earth turned into nothing more than an unliving fortification. At least, that was what Zack figured they were, as this band of zombies definitely hadn't come about naturally.
"How the hell are we supposed to sneak in like this?" Agras spat. "There is no way that the people inside won't be alerted if we start killing this rabble."
"Can't we just walk past them?" Emily asked. "Isn't that what our talismans are for?"
"No way," the demon said as he threw a humored glance at the teenager. "They're stupid, but not that stupid. Besides, I bet there is some fail-safe for that."
"Some sort of diversion?" Zack muttered.
He briefly considered using the thing he had gotten from Void's disciple, but he eventually decided against it. This was still just an outer shield, and the real forces of the Lich King were nowhere in sight. Using that thing right now was a waste, and it was better left to use as a surprise when Zack was right in front of his target. Besides, Void had said that he was meant to activate the black crystal inside a castle, and there was nothing of the sort in sight just yet. That point alone made Zack a bit worried. It meant that his whole idea to sneak attack the leaders had already failed. Even if they rushed inside after blasting through the wall, the Lich King would probably be ready to meet their assault. Still, they had managed to get pretty close without being noticed, which was worth something. It would be too late to recall larger forces to defend by this point, and there was no way the undead general stationed in the Horde would be able to come back in time.
"Can't be anything big," Agros slowly said. "We want these rotting bastards out of the way without causing a scene. We need to hit the shield before the owners inside notice us. If they take active control, it will be twice as hard to break inside."
"What about miasma crystals?" Emily ventured.
"We throw a few of them to the left and one to the right. I heard that zombies search out things that benefit their strength instinctively. Shouldn't that split them up?"
The idea of throwing out miasma crystals as breadcrumbs sounded extraordinarily stupid, but it quickly became apparent that no one had a better idea. Joanna proposed they dig a tunnel, but Zack remembered how the slightest tremor in the earth had been immediately exposed by geomancers when fighting the second beast wave. Agros also suggested for Zack to somehow telepathically control them in his Draugr form, but he simply had no way to do that. Though, to be fair, turning into a Draugr might push the zombies away, as there was a massive inherent difference in caste between the noble races and some newly turned zombies without sapience. But he wanted to keep that as an ace in the hole, so they had no better option than going with Emily's plan. Dozens of F-grade miasma crystals soared through the air and landed in the densely packed group of zombies as Zack started to throw them to their left and right. It took a few seconds for the undead to register what was going on, but they slowly started to congregate toward the energy-rich crystals on the ground. It created a 5-meter-wide corridor almost completely devoid of zombies in front of them, and the group wordlessly rushed forward to set up an illusion array right next to the barrier. A few zombies seemed to feel that something was amiss, but they soon joined the others in the struggle for miasma crystals after they couldn't see anything odd in their surroundings. This close to the barrier, they could finally spot an almost completely transparent black film blocking them like a wall, proving the shield covered every inch of the core zone. Kenzie set up a set of mobile arrays that blocked out their presence, meaning the zombies wouldn't find them even if they lost interest in the miasma crystals. However, there was clearly no love lost between the zombies, and the attraction of the crystals was beyond their expectation as undead fought tooth and nail for them. It was just a matter of time before the ruckus was exposed or the zombies started getting ripped apart, so they were still against the clock. The group had gone over the plan multiple times on the leaf and as they ran through the forest, and now was the time to put it into action. Zack and Agros were both imbued with a fiery axe, whereas Kenzie got the one crackling with lightning that improved intelligence and wisdom. This was the benefit Emily had gotten from upgrading the proficiency of the skill. She could now boost 3 people in total, but she was only able to get 1 boost per type. The 6 Valkyries each took out a large engraved spike and stuck it into the ground, forming a perfect circle within their bubble. They then placed their massive bulwarks outside them to prevent any interference while further isolating their small circle. Kenzie withdrew a densely inscribed skull that emitted scorching heat, along with a bunch of flame crystals they had dug up from Zack's new mine in the underworld. 6 chains were attached to the skull in various positions, and the 6 Valkyries each took one and attached it to their respective spike, effectively fettering the head to the ground. Kenzie made sure that the inscriptions held and that the array flags were properly planted, and Zack couldn't help but look at the odd scene with bemusement. This was one of the array breakers he had found in the Mentalist's spatial ring, and Kenzie had chosen this one for 2 reasons. First of all, it was fire-attuned, which seemed pretty effective against the undead, based both on Zack's experiences and looking at the Church of the Everlasting Tao. Secondly, it was one of the breakers that were simple to use, with the downside that it carried low strength on its own. Its strength was rather based on the power of the people infusing it. The users would feed it with their energy and Tao, and the array would convert it into an attack especially suited for burning a hole in an array. It would allow Zack to not only take advantage of his recent boost in energy circulation, but also release a blast of power without wasting any of his long cooldown attacks on the wall.
"Give me a few seconds," Kenzie said, as she pushed one spike after another down into the ground, forming yet another array surrounding the treasure in the middle. "Get ready to infuse the main array with your cosmic energy and Tao's. The more chaotic, the better."
10 spikes turned to dozens that embedded themselves in the ground as Kenzie threw them in rapid succession, forming an increasingly large array that soon enough spread even outside the confines of their illusion array. Small spikes shot out between the zombies with pinpoint precision and lodged themselves in the ground.
"These spikes will destabilize the energy flow in the area, making it harder for the shield to feed off the ambient energy. They might even disconnect this section of the barrier from the unholy beacons. They will burn out quickly, though, so you need to activate the array breaker the moment it's ready," she said.
Zack and the others nodded, and cosmic energy was already coursing through Zack's body as he readied himself.
"Go!"
Kenzie said the moment she had finalized connecting the inscribed skull with the 6 spikes that the Valkyries controlled. Zack, Agros, Kenzie, and Joanna placed their hands on the skull, which was as large as an elephant's, and the whole area started to twist and turn as a massive congregation of power started building inside the hollow head. Its eyes started to flicker with chaotic colors as the Taos of the 4 clashed with increasing ferocity. It even started to vibrate, causing the chains to rattle, but it still seemed like it could swallow more. Emily was instead dancing around inside the array, waving her tomahawks, and Zack realized that his mind felt extremely refreshed. Whatever she was doing was actually dispersing the negative effect of standing inside miasma. It was a lot like Hatchet Man's spirit in that regard, as it felt like the inhospitable atmosphere had suddenly turned into something uniquely suited to them. It helped Zack move his energy with a lot more vigor as an unceasing torrent of energy coursed through his arm and into the inscribed head. He infused the head with his fragment of the axe as well, as he felt the Tao fragment would increase the destructive might the most. In a perfect world, he would have wanted to use all three fragments, but he simply wasn't able to do that. The hollow skull was quickly approaching the limits of what it could contain, while the six remaining Valkyries focused on keeping the supportive array flag stable. The ground shuddered and heaved by this point, and the zombies finally realized something was amiss. There was no way for the illusion array to block out the terrifying amounts of energy they were churning inside, as it was affecting the whole area by this point, and the zombies roared as they charged at the source of the disturbance.
"Shield!"
Joanna shouted, and six streams of silver cosmic energy flowed from the Valkyries and fused to form a sturdy wall surrounding them, using the chitinous shields as a base. The zombies desperately tried to cut through, but the war array the Valkyries had gotten from the quest showed its worth, as it didn't even shudder from the onslaught. Of course, these zombies were far from being the elites of the undead empire, but there were over 100 attackers in just a second. The stalwart shield allowed Zack and the others to wholeheartedly focus on the skull, and it finally rose into the air, stretching all the chains taut.
"Get ready to run,"
Kenzie said as she swiped straight at the chains, breaking them in three swift motions. A piercing screech, seemingly from the abyss, emerged from the mouth of the skull, and a blinding flame illuminated the sky as it exploded into motion. Zack's heart lurched when he saw that the flaming skull actually flew straight into the sky, and he started to worry that the weird treasure would simply fly away. However, his worries were alleviated when Kenzie threw out a flaming spike straight at the closest of the black runes that was 20 meters away from them. It looked like the skull had found its prey, as it immediately did a 180 and shot toward the barrier with extreme momentum. It instantly broke the sound barrier as it flew toward the wall, causing waves of multifarious flames to incinerate everything close to its path, including dozens of zombies. A terrifying blast spread out the next moment, as the flaming skull actually bit into the black fractal, and Zack's eyes lit up when a small crack in the rune appeared in an instant. The crack quickly grew as the flames increased in intensity, seemingly without limit, and Zack took a steadying breath as Varun's bite appeared in his right hand. It was go time.
Chapter 83. Pillars and Beams. The whole array of black runes lit up in an instant, but the runes around Zack's group were still dim, thanks to Kenzie's efforts. However, explosions erupted in every direction as the array flags burnt out in quick succession. Thankfully, the barrier couldn't hold it any longer, and it suddenly shattered as the maw of the fiery skull closed with a snap. A massive crack provided an ingress for the group, and they heedlessly braved the flames as they rushed inside, protected by the still running war array of the six Valkyries. A victorious roar sent a fiery discharge in each direction before the skull crumbled to white ash. Zack summoned nature's barrier and blocked out the fallout, but the zombies on the other side of the array weren't so lucky. Hundreds of them were incinerated in one fell swoop, and the shield had already mended itself before any new unliving could take their place. It looked like these pitiful creatures really weren't considered part of the undead empire just yet, as they were utterly incapable of following Zack and the others through the intangible barrier. Zack knew that an advanced force like the undead empire would be able to erect arrays that could discern friend and foe, especially when there was such a striking difference between the living and the dead.
but it looked like the Lich King had elected to keep even his own outside the core area. Perhaps too many zombies would be a drain on the limited miasma in the atmosphere or something. Of course, it wasn't like there weren't any zombies on the other side of the enclosure. Large mobs of the undead were already rushing toward them from the distance, while Zack spotted clumps of corpse golems guarding the unholy beacons. These ones were the real deal as well, the crafty and ruthless elite zombies that probably were on the precipice of evolving into sapient revenants. Zack flashed away and gripped one of the zombies, who shrieked as he tried to dig his rotting teeth into Zack's arm. Its assault was obviously futile, with Zack's 2,000-plus endurance, though. Zack shook the undead man for a bit to make him release his grip before he flung him toward the defensive array. The nearby zombies roared in anger as they tried to mob Zack in retaliation, but they were dismembered by a few lazy swings of his axe. The projectile zombie flew straight through the array, confirming Zack's guess. It worked like his own town defense array, only keeping people out in one direction. It was valuable information in case they were forced to flee later on.
"Let's go," Zack said. "They definitely know we're here by now."
The squad started running toward the shining incursion pillar that was barely discernible in the distance through the thick miasmic haze. However, they barely had time to move a few hundred meters before the sky changed, and one aquamarine fractal after another started appearing. These runes were clearly not the realignment array, but rather something meant to deal with intruders.
"Oi, Nala, you were right," Agros groaned. "It's not worth it."
"What?" Kenzie asked with a frown from the side. Zack ignored the two as he activated cosmic gaze and turned it toward the sky. The arrays were obviously made from miasma, but Zack frowned when he saw that they contained something that could best be described as condensed death, and this weird energy was quickly accumulating more power. It was like the array was taking the death-attuned cosmic energy and taking away the energy itself, leaving just the concept behind. He didn't know what use that stuff was, but it felt extremely dangerous. He needed to stop them from activating.
"Destroy the unholy beacons,"
Zack said, as a massive fractal edge grew out from Verun's bite. He activated Loamwalker the next second, and within moments, he found himself in front of the closest beacon. It was more than 3 times the size of the mobile pillars he had seen so far during the 2 invasions of his island, and the hair on his arms stood on end from the extremely condensed miasma surrounding it. A fractal blade grew from his axe, and a wide arc swept through the guarding golems, causing them to fall apart into stale clumps of meat. A small amount of energy entered his body, but Zack frowned when he realized that it didn't target any specific node in his body, like he would have assumed. It instead started to spread out across his limbs until it finally started to dissipate. Did he need to direct the energy himself? Zack quickly took hold of the energy and condensed it into a ball, and it was thankfully an easy process to figure out the next step. He quickly pushed the ball of energy through his pathways until he felt some pliability from a node in his left leg. But he barely had time to push the small amount of energy inside the node before almost 100 translucent green balls poured out of the massive brazier at the top of the beacon. They caused an extremely uncomfortable weight to descend on him, and it felt like a mix of mental and physical pressure. However, Zack's wisdom had shot all the way up to 800 over the past days, a number that even most early E-grade mentalists would be hard-pressed to match. Combine that with a soul that had been forced to endure the continuous pressure from the splinter of oblivion for months, and he was starting to truly shore up his old weakness. He didn't even need to infuse mental fortress with the fragment of the Bodhi to effortlessly shrug off the mental pressure, and a few quick swings caused the tower to crumble. However, his mind warned him of danger the moment the beacon started to collapse, and he hurriedly flashed away. It was just in time as well, as a chain of explosions turned the whole area around the beacon into a frozen hellscape. At least half of the odd spheres had been filled with ice-attuned energies, it seemed, and while their individual destructiveness wasn't too threatening, they still were a cause for concern when there were almost 100 of them balled together. Zack glanced at the sky, and was relieved to see that a handful of the newly appeared fractals had dissipated, but most were still going strong as they condensed their energies. One of them suddenly activated, and a wave of darkness shot down at Agras and Kenzie, who were whittling down another one of the beacons. Agras had already taken out the corpse golems, and was working on the tower, whereas Kenzie waved her staff to conjure dozens of fireballs in an instant that shot out at an incoming wave of zombies. The flames seemed to have a life of their own as they hopped from target to target and caused an extremely impressive amount of destruction for how little energy she seemed to have consumed. However, there was no time to admire his sister's growth, as the wave from the sky was almost upon them.
"Watch out!"
Zack shouted at the demon, who was immediately swallowed whole by a shroud of shadows. Another ball of shadows started to rise around Kenzie, but she had already flickered away in a gust of wind, narrowly avoiding the darkness. The demon wasn't as lucky, as he was actually forced out of the shadows a few meters away from his earlier position as the wave swallowed him whole. The area turned back to normal the next moment, but Zack knew something was wrong when he saw how pale the demon was. He flashed over and was alarmed to sense an overwhelming death-attuned aura coming from the demon. It was like he was being forcibly converted into a revenant in front of his eyes, and the process looked extremely painful. Zack quickly grabbed the demon's shoulder and flooded him with the fragment of the Bodhi as he gobbled up the large amounts of death-attuned energies for himself. He felt a bit queasy from the incompatible energy, but his void heart would deal with it soon enough.
"Ah," the demon groaned as he spat a ball of black phlegm. "Zombifying beams? Just great. Thanks, by the way."
"No problem," Zack smiled. "Thank you for protecting Kenzie."
"What protecting? Just making a fool of myself,"
Agras grunted as he shakily got back to his feet. The next moment, he disappeared and reappeared next to the unholy beacon once more. A storm of strikes slammed into the base as a forest of shadow spears rose to meet the falling balls, piercing all of them with expert accuracy. The beacon toppled the next moment, but the demon was obviously out for blood, or at least unwilling to let the arrays in the sky keep shooting at them. The demon didn't even stop to loot the potentially valuable pillar as he shot toward the next one, repeating the process. However, the arrays in the sky were all starting to power up by now, and they clearly didn't only rely on the closest unholy beacons for power. Staying around and taking out the pillars was a waste of time, and the group instead started rushing toward the core. Wave after wave of elite zombies appeared to impede their path, but Zack's group was like a grindstone that turned anything that came too close into shreds. Zack was occasionally shooting out a fractal blade or flashed away to take out another beacon, but he mainly relied on the others to break open a path so that he could reserve his strength. It was rather Kenzie and Joanna who did the heavy lifting. The chief Valkyrie seemed to have gained a repeatable area strike upon reaching level 50, and she was using it freely at the moment. It was a pretty odd one as well. She kept conjuring a silver ball in the air in front of her, but the moment it appeared, she attacked it with a powerful stab with her spear. The ball cracked like a broken mirror, and sharp shards reminiscent of all kinds of crude weapons shot into the zombie horde with even greater momentum than her strike had. Some of the shards were shaped like spear tips, and they punched gruesome holes into the undead. Others were bladed weapons, like swords or axes, and these shards cleanly cut limbs or heads off any zombie they passed. Zack shot a surprised glance at Joanna, feeling that she was walking down an interesting path. It made him think of the war steel and the Tao of War. one of the possible upgrade paths of the various weapon-based Daos. If Joanna managed to walk down that road, she would have a chance to become as powerful as the great general in the vision. Kenzie's side was an ever-changing scene as well, where the Undying got incinerated one second and flash-frozen the next. She had also summoned a mysterious wheel that hovered above her head, and every time it turned 90 degrees, a devastating blast from one of the four elements was launched. It reminded Zack of a drone as it kept pace with Kenzie, but he could quickly confirm that it was a construct made from attuned energies with the help of cosmic gaze. Zack didn't understand what kind of skill it was, but it felt a bit like the massive demonic angel that Iztain had summoned. Was the wheel some sort of companion, but perhaps more akin to a golem than an elemental? However, while the recent improvements of the two were impressive, their low levels were an undeniable weakness. Each strike could only kill so many of the unthinking rabble, but there was an unending stream of them that kept trying to tire them out before they reached the core. At least, that was what Zack thought the undead were trying to do. They were beset by an endless number of elite zombies as they ran, but they had not encountered a single revenant or another elite unit of the undead empire since taking down the unholy beacons. Worse yet, the group was constantly bombarded by waves of death from above, and they often had to interrupt their strike to desperately scramble out of the way. Kenzie was already panting from the exertion, but she insisted that she could keep going. Zack didn't say anything, as he knew they were trying to help as much as they could while allowing him to save his strength, because these waves of unliving were just the appetizer, whereas the main course was finally coming into vision just ahead. A massive black fortress reaching toward the sky, with a backdrop consisting of an aquamarine pillar that pierced the miasmic haze. This was the first structure Zack's group had encountered inside the dead zone, aside from the endless ruins of the countries it had gobbled up. But Zack guessed that this monstrous structure would have no problem housing every single elite that had been brought over from the undead kingdom of the Zekia sector, along with tens of thousands of the best zombies who had been recruited here on Earth. It might even be more apt to call it a city than a castle, if it weren't for the fact that it really seemed to be one cohesive structure. Its pitch-black wall rose almost 20 meters into the air, wrought from some stone that Zack didn't recognize. It was covered in both turquoise fractals and intricate carvings reminiscent of European Gothic architecture. Dozens of towers protruded from within the walls as well, each of them well over 100 meters tall. They all seemed to house terrifyingly powerful unholy beacons at the top, probably responsible for providing energy for the whole building. They almost looked like fountains as dense clouds of miasma billowed down along their lengths, as though they were liquid. They could vaguely spot the roof of many more sections, but the towering wall made it hard to make out any real impression of the layout inside. However, finding their way inside was the least of their concerns at the moment, as they first needed to break through the army waiting at the wall walk. Thousands of revenants, golems, and corpse lords stood at the front, their killing intent palpable as they looked down at their small squad from above.
"Super Brother Man, or should I say, Zachary Atwood?"
A decrepit voice full of power flowed down from up high, which helped Zack spot an all-too-familiar hooded being.
"You came, after all. Not that you had much choice. But you'll find the undead empire a completely different target than the invaders you fought until now."
Fury surged in Zack's chest as he looked at the man on the wall. It was him, the Lich King. Chapter 84, Wall Breakers. It was the man who had almost killed Aleya, the man who had left him no recourse but to either let her die or turn her into a spirit tool, not to mention causing the creeping death of their whole planet. His appearance was all too familiar, as it was the very same one as the four ghosts he had fought back in Port Atwood. Zack had already known that the hooded beings he killed were clones, or projections, as destroying the four identical copies provided no cosmic energy. He had also suspected him to either be the Lich King or one of his generals, but it looked like he had his answer now. He was accompanied by a powerful-looking female to his left, and a wretched ghost to his right. If one of the generals was occupied in the zombie horde, then these two might just be the last two generals of the undead incursion. The abbot had killed two of the six when they tried to take down Mount Everlasting Peace, and Zack had dealt with Maul himself, leaving just three. A host of ghosts hovered behind them in the air as well, perhaps there to provide the three with war arrays. Anger burned inside his chest, and his mind worked a mile a minute in figuring out a way to get up on that wall walk to rip that man into pieces. However, he was surprised to sense the demon next to him sporting a similar killing intent.
"It's that bitch," Agros muttered from the side, his eyes trained on the ghastly woman standing to the side of the Lich King.
She looked almost like a pale human with long, black flowing hair, but her hands were replaced by grisly claws with unnaturally long fingers.
"You know her too?" Kenzie asked with surprise. "She's the one who almost killed me and Ilvir. I thought we had killed her by detonating the Mecha."
"All the more reason for me to skewer her," the demon muttered. "That crazy banshee almost caught me inside an array when we fought last time. This time we'll see who will be the scuttle creeper and who'll be the Gwilgi."
A roar from behind interrupted their discussion, and Zack turned around to see that the zombies pretty much had caught up with them. There were thankfully no zombies between themselves and the wall, though. Perhaps the Lich King was afraid of friendly fire. The undead saw zombies as something between children and potential recruits, after all. They both were and weren't part of the undead empire just yet, and while they wouldn't really mourn their true death, they also weren't keen on killing them with their own hands. The six Valkyries set up their war array once more, and they started a methodical slaughter of anyone who came too close, under the direction of Joanna, allowing Zack and the others to focus on the castle.
"Do you people have any better ideas than charging right at them?" Zack asked.
"They are obviously prepared for a siege," the demon